I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome. You are joining us in the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. My name is James Whelan, Managing Director of Barclay Pearce Capital's Wealth Management Team. This show is brought to you by Wakey Wakey, a beautiful product from Wellnex, again reporting another month of profitability, which is great. Really happy for them and everything that they've done. And a Wakey Wakey is just the thing that I need today after the ensemble all licensee PD day, ALPD day that happened yesterday, followed by the cocktail party that was amazing. Danielle, Clayton, Emily, Darren, all in fine form. Thank you so much for that. Anyway, yeah, we had an absolute barn burner last night. It was sensational. But a Wakey Wakey or two would probably help you out after a night like that. We're drinking champagne out of goblets. It was a sensational evening. Really good networking event. The market, I've got to say, the market in the planning space, what people would say was more boring space, is definitely a lot more sensible. No one on the tables, no one getting their shirts off, the sort of stuff that happens in the broker side of things. Speaking of the more boring side of things, I'm joined by Heath Moss of HLM Investments. Heath, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thanks, mate. Thanks for that glowing endorsement. I'm good, mate. It's been a week. I'm exhausted. I'm done. I'm done for the week. So. But yeah, it's been a week. Luckily, the markets have been fairly quiet, actually fairly bullish as well. You got your wakey-wakey there, or 90-90.
In a schooner glass taken from Ryan's bar. It was here when everyone, I don't know where they came from. That's just what happens, mate. It's, good week in the markets.
Yeah, fairly positive, bouncing back. Markets have regained almost all their the losses that they made in the previous weeks. I think we got down about 5%. The US is almost back to evens now. The Australian market's got a little bit more to do, but we'll keep on pushing.
Let's pull up the chart. We got the first chart up here, mate. That's the US market that everyone said, oh, this is it. It's all coming off. It's all over. You know, look at it. It's almost made back, completely made back everything that it wiped off over the last month.
I know. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And really, it's earnings season over there. I mean, it's always earnings season over there. But the earnings have been better than expected. I think they've come in around 5% increase in earnings. And then there was about a 3.5% expected earnings. So coming in better, no nasty surprises, especially in the commentary. We've still got companies like NVIDIA to report.
NVIDIA.
Walmart has to report as well. So that's a couple of weeks away. So, everything's looking good there in terms of the US. We've had a quiet week macro-wise, although I will note data's coming in a little bit softer in the US. We had that period in the first quarter where data was starting to rip again and look really strong. Well, it's coming in a little soft again. And we've got, we had the NFPs last week, which was softer than expected. Jobless claims were higher than expected last night by a bigger margin. And PMIs have been softer again the last couple of weeks. So US data is maybe starting to do what they'd expected it to do, or the Fed and Powell, et cetera, had expected it to do, especially that jobs data. But what is it? What's that saying? The one swallow does not make a summer or something like that. So
good enough.
Yeah, something like that.
One swallow does not bring the spring or something like that.
Yeah.
Good enough.
So we wait upon other bits of data to sort of back that up. But, and on the back of that, we've seen yields come right off. They did spike. You can see the 10-year here spike up to about 4.7. They're back around the 4.45 now. Even the short end of the curve's come right back as well. Was over 5. It's now 4.8. So those expectations, cut rate expectations have started to be factored back into the market. They're still expecting two this year. November's the key date there. But we have started to see other central banks starting to cut. Brazil and Sweden cut this week. The BOE met last night. Yep.
What did the BOE do? I missed it.
They held, but the voters, amount of people that wanted to cut has increased to 2 from 1, and they're expecting a cut in August for the BOE. A little bit of a different story there, simply because data is fairly weak in the UK, and CPI and inflation is non-existent. So, it's looking good there. Japan is doing Japan things. I mean,
Japan's doing Japan worrying. Things. What expert analysis over here with HLM Investments?
Yeah, I know.
Japan's doing Japan things. That's what people pay us for. Yeah, righto. What's pull up the yen. I want to see some other charts as well.
Yeah, what is it? USD, JPY. Where are we? There we go. So you can see there, I mean, this is the USD JPY. So, you know, the higher this goes, the lower the Japanese yen's going. So that's breached 155 again. There was intervention. You can see here the intervention from the BOJ. They got it back down to about the 152. Look, people keep on saying this is a concern, that the weakening Japanese yen, but I'm not so sure. I mean, they've got $1.2 trillion in US dollar currency assets backing them up. Now, the lower the yen goes, the more valuable that becomes. They don't have inflation problems. The inflation is still sitting around that 2% mark over there. So they don't have wage problems. And most of their market is exporter facing. So, you know, exporting, it makes them much more attractive in terms of exporting, much more attractive than China. Which will help their car exports and just obviously white goods and all that sort of gear that they export as well. So I'm not so sure it's as big a concern. I think Japan's still a fantastic place to invest, and you're going to get a lot of lot back from those conglomerates splitting up, and a lot of their bigger companies are sitting on massive piles of cash. And they're going to go out there and start buying, and you know, Australian companies will be under the microscope there too. So
remember my investment case for Japan late last year was again off the back of the BlackRock view. I reiterate this one. It's not my original idea, but it all came out of the BlackRock side. Just how much money is sitting on the sidelines, just from even at regular Japanese investor level. That just will be ploughing into the market over the next 12 months, and it's absolutely been the case.
Yep. So yeah,
can I request some charts, please? So back in the US, let's have a look at Airbnb. Okay. This is going to test out operator.
There we go. Come on, there's nothing
What's
I can't
the stock
do
code for that.
Airbnb.
That's a bad report there. So that's dropped. Just for the people who are listening on the radios, that's a big drop for that one.
With 168 down to about 147.
That's one of the ones that reported badly on there. And I actually think that Airbnb beat on a lot of things, but there was some clangor that was in there. But the one that I want to see that just reported literally a few hours ago is Equinix. So EQIX is the code. And that was... I think Equinix was my last big bang the table investment case last year, and it rallied and rallied and rallied, and then I left. I've come here, so a lot of the people that did, a lot of them stayed with VFS because that it was more appropriate for their financial circumstances to stay there. EQX really just rode the way down, didn't it? I mean, EQX is a funny one. This the reason I bring it up, because I think that Equinix is a it's a REIT that holds for data centers. And so it's the biggest, what you would think theoretically, the biggest beneficiary of the AI revolution. You need more data centers, just the growth in storage capacity that you need. And that's why Equinix was such a good investment case. And then a massive short report came out from, I don't know if it was Hindenburg, one of those guys that came out with a big old short report on it. It's been declining. I mean, that's drastic just how much that's declined over that. And then it's reported out of the box, so it's put on another 11% this morning. But whilst I haven't followed it, because I'm not advising at that level so detailed anymore, it's just one that I want to keep close to knowing exactly what it's all about, because of just how instrumental it is in the AI game. And you think theoretically this thing should have kept on going up. It pays a healthy dividend, it's in that, but there's something inherently wrong with this company apparently that was enough to scare some investors out of that thing. Just wanted to pay attention to, that's all.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that short report and see what they identify as the main problems, because you're right. In theory, it should be doing very, very well considering the growth in data centers over there. So, yeah, and that's a theme I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, how to get exposure to data centers in Australia. Obviously, you got NextDC and Macquarie Telecommunications, that are the two big ones. But then you've also got like Goodman Group, who are building massive data centers themselves, and that's seen them upgrade their profit this week, upcoming profit this week, because of that growth in data centers. But there's also this thematic around, you know, the amount of power and energy these things are going to use. By 2030, data centers will use 20% of the US energy grid. That's phenomenal how much power. There's 10 times more power needed on a ChatGPT search versus a Google search. So there's a real problem there. Yeah. And there's a real problem there as how we power these things or get the power for these things first, because we all know places like California are really struggling with their grid. And secondly, how do we do it in a green way? And so obviously uranium, nuclear power is number one. We've seen
that. I can give you a cheat sheet. Yeah, the best cheat that I've got for that, or the best sort of investment case, is put together by the guys at Firetrail. They're one of the pinnacle funds. That's they're all ex-Macquarie guys. They've got a small cap fund, but they gave a presentation to us a few weeks ago. It was nice, you know, a few sandwiches in the boardroom and just run through their investment themes. It's got a big theme on that, and they've got a couple of really, really sharp ideas in that presentation.
So anyone who's
out there who wants to follow what you're just saying, that's the Firetrail guys have got some really good stocks that are in that space, and the investment case behind why they're investing in it, and they're not idiots. So that's where I'd be looking for a few more ideas too.
Yeah, and we spoke about uranium months ago, and it's bull case, and that's still there. You know, the structural supply deficit they're coming into. We saw Cameco report a week or two ago. They missed their production numbers by a decent amount. I think it was 330,000 pounds. Kazatomprom came out and met their production numbers, but they've pushed back the start date of their sulfuric acid plant to 2027 or 2026. And that's one of the main problems, and one of these things that is holding back production is the availability of sulfuric acid. So that builds into the uranium bull case. We're going to be about 50 million pounds this year. I've just been using uranium stocks here in Australia, Paladin, Boss Energy and Lotus Energy as my main picks to get exposure there. And they've all done very, very well. I think Lotus has got a bit of catch up to do. Paladin and Boss Energy have been really, really good leaders this week and up substantially, and Lotus have sort of dragged behind. And I think there's a bit of a catch up to be done there. So I think Lotus may outperform in the next couple of weeks. But there's also another one.
Yep.
If you think about tin. Now, tin, to me, I've been listening to a couple of good
podcasts
on this. Yeah, tin could be uranium 2.0. We've got a similar thing happening in tin in terms of structural supply deficits that could push the price. I mean, we saw it go to $50,000 a ton in 2020-21. It's currently around $32,000. I've heard numbers expecting $100,000 a ton. Now, tin, we all know 50% of the tin market or more is used in electronics, solder.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Of course, if we're building all these data centers and GPUs and AI and all that sort of gear, we're going to need a heap more of that. So, excuse me, what's happened in the last, say, 6 to 12 months is Myanmar, there was a coup in Myanmar. They stopped exporting most of their tin. And now Indonesia have come in and said, we will be halting most of our raw tin exports as well, because they're going to do similar to what they've done with nickel and copper. And they want to value add. They want to add up that chain and make more products out of it rather than just shipping the pure concentrate out. So there's about 60,000 tons of tin that's coming out of the market. And the tin market's only around 370,000 tons overall. And demand, they expect by 2030 that the electronics sector's demand will double to 70,000 tons of tin demand by 70,000 tons. Sorry, so that's huge in a market that's only 370,000 tons at the moment.
Okay, so we've got a couple of tin players there.
Yeah, well, I think actually, let me bring the stock. I'll bring this. There's only one really for me. We really are bereft of tin exposure here in Australia. We've got MLX, which is the main one, but this is a real small, tiny market, specky, high risk stuff. So, obviously, general advice. I do have exposure personally, plus clients have exposure. This is Stellar Resources. Now they're in Tasmania. They're not too far away from MLX. I think they're about 80 kilometers south of MLX, have around 80,000 tons of tin sitting in their resource, which is the third largest undeveloped resource in the world. And look, have all the permits set up, expanding that mine. It's open at strike and at depth. Look, I mean, yeah, these, again, highly speculative, only 30 million market cap. The NPV of their mine, I think, is well over 100 million. Look, I just I think this is a good play. It could be a takeover sort of target as well, with the Renison mine depleting its resources somewhat. That's what MLX have in their joint venture, the Renison mine, which is close by. So maybe that joint venture looks to take SRZ over. They've got cash. They just raised $4 million. Yeah, I really like these guys for tin exposure. Again, only 1.9 cents, highly speculative. But
tell me about it. Stuff down that end. Yeah.
So yeah, if you can find exposure to tin, I'm still scouring the ASX. Have a good look at it, because I think it could be the next sort of uranium style play.
Okay. What else you got for us, mate? Sorry, I'm just trying to pull up an email that's got some stuff for the footy tipping comp. And
beautiful. Talk about the Australian discretionary retailers quickly. We had the Macquarie conference this week, where a lot of companies go, and it's sort of confession season. And a lot of the Australian retailers were there, JB Hi-Fi, Super Retail, Baby Bunting, etc. They all came out and were painting a very weak picture of the Australian consumer, very soft. Comparable sales were down to flat for JB Hi-Fi and for Super Retail. Baby Bunting was terrible. Their comparable sales were down 7%. And basically saying that young couples are really seeing the really hurting from the cost of living increases, and obviously, you know, most young families is what they've got exposure to, having been in the business of babies. The only sort of shining light was Flight Centre. They came out and said their total turnover surpassed 2019's record. They're going to have record sales. Things are looking really good there. So it seems like we're cutting back on everything except for travel, and travel's getting cheaper. Airfares and hotels and that are coming down again. But yeah, overall, and we've seen it with the macro data, the Australian retail sales macro data, it's very, very soft. And I would expect that to trough in Q2 or Q3 of this year. And things will start looking better there in the second half, with tax cuts, possible RBA cuts, real income rising. And something like a JB Hi-Fi would be looking close to the $50 mark, whereas it's currently around $57 and topped out around $65. So, that's about it.
That's about it, mate. I've got no problem with, it's a funny thing that's coming up in Australia. Obviously, the retailers are going to be pretty closely related to where rates are looking. And I think that the annoyance that there is and the indecisiveness of the RBA with their messaging. It's a very muddy messaging this week from the RBA.
Yep.
That is obviously, these two things are hand in hand.
Yep.
Between that, discretionary spending is something. It's, I think that we're almost at the last of those fixed, any of the fixed stuff is now rolling off from the low interest rate ones. We're almost at the end of that sort of thing. So everyone talking about whatever, and remember all of these things were peak and cliff and it was what was going on.
Mortgage cliff and sort of stuff. Yep.
Yep. And it's, well, look, we're here. This is as cliffy as it's going to get. I can tell you from personal experience, it's as tight as a duck's, you know, about with regards to spending. Yeah. I just don't see a reason to be buying any of the retailers here. Sorry, it's just me. I just don't see where it's going to come in.
If it wasn't for their price appreciation from the end of last year to, you know, Q1 this year, where, you know, JB Hi-Fi went from about $45 to $65, and it was really on the back of multiples expansion. It went from about 10 to 11 times forward earnings to 16 times. I mean, that's why I'm saying I'd like to see a little bit more pullback here, get down to about, say, 12 times forward earnings, and then I'm interested. Because, you know, something like JB Hi-Fi, it's our premier retailer. It is number one, best by many metrics. I want exposure, but at the right price.
True. Okay, mate, get your footy, get your bets in. What have you got for us?
Footy tips. All right, I got two, because one's for tonight's game. We're going to double header tonight in the AFL for some reason. And you're not going to like this. I think Frio are going to beat your Swannies over there in Perth. They're paying $2.25. I don't know why they're such underdogs over there.
Perth don't travel so well.
Yeah, it's over there. It's over in Perth. So
Perth don't travel. The Swannies don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you don't listen to the pod in time for that, I think the Eagles will cover the line versus the Pies in Melbourne on Sunday. I think that's 39.5. That's paying $1.90. So I think that's another one. Eagles have been impressive. Harley Reid's got them going, got a bit of enthusiasm about the place. So, I don't think they're that as bad as the lines suggest there.
Okay, not bad at all. As for me, let's see who I had. I got a couple of really good NRL ones. I think the Tigers are a chance this week. G'day, Robbie. If you're listening, I know he is. I was trying to get him in. I think that they've actually got to go out to, I think they're out at Tamworth or something tomorrow. So the West Tigers paying $2.34 against the Knights. The Knights have been surprisingly good without Kalen Ponga, and I think that they're an absolute red-hot screamer. I also think the Eels. Okay, you know what? Let's have a bit of special. Let's have a real good special one.
Yep.
I'm going to have a few people over to my house tonight to watch the Panthers game. But look, after that, we've got the Eels versus the Broncos. I'm taking the line with the Eels, 9.5. Put that into the Tigers on the nose. Go, you Tigers. And you got yourself a fat multi. That might get blown up in the first 20 minutes, which is always the way that I like my multis to be. So, hey, let's just see what?
Yeah, go, mate, hard or go.
If you're gonna lose, early. If that's paying you $4.50, paying you $4.50.
$4.50, beautiful.
And that's people wanted some real special, some real deep value in that one, mate. I reckon there's a chance there. So that's Eels with the 9.5 start against the Broncos. Broncos will be without Adam Reynolds. I haven't even checked the team list, but I saw what happened to his arm last week. There's no way that he'll be playing again this season, I reckon. Also, on top of that, congratulations to Tim Kelly, who won the next slot. We do our footy tipping, our external footy tipping comp, for the Barclay Pierce footy tipping comp, and we do it in 4-week increments. So Tim Kelly, who's a planner, who's a bond manager or something like that down south, I reached out to him. He said he doesn't want the gift voucher, so I got to find the next guy. It's actually quite a bit of money. It's not nothing. But congratulations to Tim Kelly. It's yours, mate. Congratulations. You were the best of the externals in that one. So congratulations, Tim. I got to try and find whoever was after him for that next slot. And we started the new round this week. And good luck to everyone who's in it as well. Mate, I've got my wild outsiders in there too. That's about all the time we've got today, mate. Is there anything else, last bids? Otherwise, I'm going to close it off.
I'm all done, mate.
All right. Good idea. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this week's episode of the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. Happy birthday to me, turning a big 43 on Monday. A number that I didn't think that I would get to. 42 is where it was all supposed to cap out, but hey, next thing you know, here you are doing these sorts of things. Gee, I've got a lot of... I'll tell you what, mate, actually, just coming off the back of it, the roadshow that we did last week really was amazing, and it was so good. Thank you to all the brokers and everyone who attended, all the advisors and actual real high net worth clients that actually came out and talked to Mike from Impact Minerals. They have a hell of a holding at Lake Hope in the mud. IPT. I'll pull up the stock price. This is what happens when I roadshow. When I roadshow a company, things shift. So that's actually not us in there either. So that's coming from somewhere else. Not to go into any detail on that one, but yeah. So a really good holding. People hearing that story, I continue to reiterate. I feel like the first person who's discovered the moon. It turns out that it was sitting there the whole time, and then you look at it, and there it is. So Impact Minerals. Yeah, it was amazing. Thank you so much, everyone, for doing it. And thank you very much, Jai, Ayub, and the 247 team that we're attached to here, and Tessa Kelly, who did some amazing job getting those bookings. The way that we've got, so and this is the Barclay Pierce Capital Wealth Management way, which we've decided this is how we do it, as opposed to it just being a whole bunch of brokers. Anyone sort of comes in a big Chinese room and you can say, great, we've got 40 people sitting in the room to hear the story. They've all got the little sheets and they flick through and they go, okay, this is your jork and these are your samples and here's what you... You know, here's where your raises and here's your shares and all that sort of stuff. And everyone flicks through, finish, pay the bill, leave, and looks good. We've got a different way of doing it, which is sort of more of a high, like a more exclusive side, higher per head cost, but everyone makes that booking. So it's a nicer restaurant. It's a good, we found some really good ones. Society down in Melbourne, a fantastic restaurant that we've got. The advisors in that room were very attentive, absolutely there. Nobody misses that booking. Nobody took a call 10 minutes before and decided not to come. It was a sensational thing. And everyone's listening and attentive, and everyone is very much going, okay, I'm here to invest, or I'm here to actually assess whether or not I'm going to put money into this thing. And the way that we do it works. It's incredible. I'm so proud of everyone and the work that they've done here and what continues to go on with that. So congratulations and thank you. You can't be thankful enough for the people around you. You're only as good as that. You're only as good as the people around you. So on that note, you have joined us for the Theory of Thing Investment podcast. My name is James Wheeler, Managing Director of Barclay Pierce Capital's Wealth Management Team. It is the 10th of May, 2024. It's almost lunchtime. I'm feeling like a steak. That's probably how that's going to go in my direction on this beautiful Friday. What's for lunch for you there, Heath?
I reckon I'm going to have a bung fritz roll. Bung fritz and sauce, mate.
That's
South Australian very South special.
Very South Australian. Okay. Good on you, mate. Thanks for joining us, and I'll catch you next week.
Have a good one, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, mate. All right, stay on the line. Get that done.
All right. See you, mate.
Talk to you later. Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.